This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Later on this edition of Ozarks, hundreds of pets orphaned by the tornado in Joplin found new homes this weekend. We'll find out how the adoptions were organized.
And for fans of Beyoncé or the HBO shows Entourage and Curb Your Enthusiasm, July is a big month. And there's some small Harry Potter movie that will be released in July as well. Wayne Bell, the man behind the column Culture Club at FayettevilleFlyer.com, gives us several reasons to look forward to next month.
That's coming up on today's show, but if you would like a preview of tomorrow's edition of Ozarks, you can check out our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/Ozarks at Large for show previews as well as photos and links.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from AY Magazine, About You, offering information about style, life, money, well-being, and more, including cooking and gardening videos. A restaurant guide is available as well as information about places to live. More information, including the AY About You app, is available at aymag.com.
When a tornado swept through Joplin last month, people were displaced from their homes, and so were a number of pets. Over the weekend, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals and the Joplin Humane Society partnered to host a two-day adopt-a-thon. Emily Schneider from the ASPCA says the event was a huge success.
We were completely floored by the outpouring of support. We had people from 24 states coming into Joplin over the adopt-a-thon weekend, and we were able to find homes for 745 pets.
That's great. And you said that there were people that came from about 24 states, and I think it was about 5,700 is what I had read. Were you surprised to see so many people come out to help adopt these animals?
Yeah, you know, we were expecting a large crowd, but not as large as the number of people that showed up. I mean, the first day on Saturday, I think we had more than 3,000 people show up, and it was just a huge crowd. You know, we had people from, you know, Missouri, from Kansas City, St. Louis, Springfield, but we had people from Kansas, Illinois, Oklahoma, Tennessee, as far as New Mexico, a few from Pennsylvania. I mean, there are a lot of people from you know, across the country that came in to open their arms and give a permanent home to one of these animals.
Now, you were expecting a fairly large crowd. So how did you prepare for this event? How did you coordinate, I'm assuming, volunteers?
Yes. Well, we've been there since the day after the tornado hit Joplin. So we were there since May 23rd. And since then, we've had more than 100 responders rotating from various agencies. We've, the ASPCA reached out to about 89 animal welfare agencies who sent volunteers and staff to assist us with disaster relief and recovery efforts. And in total, we've been able to help about roughly 1,300 animals. And we really made every effort with the Joplin Humane Society to first reunite lost pets with their families, and that was our first goal. And we were successfully able to reunite close to 500 lost pets with their families. And we did everything from social media outreach to posting flyers, doing PSAs, taking out ads. I mean, we did everything we can to, you know, let people know that their animals, you know, may be at the emergency animal shelter. But, you know, it was after, I think, about 4 weeks, a little over a month, the tornado hit. You know, these animals really needed to be placed in a permanent home. So we started planning for an adoption event, and we had about 600 animals that were available for adoption at that time. And we, you know, basically planned a huge adopt-a-thon over Saturday, Sunday. You know, we lined up other venues and other activities that people can do while they were at the adopt-a-thon. So we had food, we had music, we had different vendors setting up stands, and it was a really nice event. I mean, there are so many people that came to Joplin, you know, just to adopt an animal and to help out and give a permanent home to a homeless pet. So it was really nice to see, you know, the support from not just the local community, but the surrounding communities as well.
Now, was the Joplin Humane Society's building damaged from the tornado?
No, actually, Joplin Humane Society was not affected by the tornado, so they were their facility was untouched.
Now, you were caring for about 1,300 animals, I believe you said, and so you had to organize emergency shelters because I'm sure that the Joplin Humane Society is not equipped for that many animals. So how does that work? How do you disperse these animals so that they can be getting the care that they need in this transition?
Mm-hmm. Well, the team lead for field investigations and response team, Tim Rickey, he was actually called in a few hours by the Joplin Humane Society to assist in emergency sheltering. The Joplin Humane Society was expecting a large number of animals that were, you know, displaced from the tornado. And, you know, the next day, Tim Rickey actually went out to Joplin and identified a location, which was, we actually were able to find a location right next to the Joplin Humane Society. There were three warehouses that were empty. And so we established an emergency shelter there. We set up crates. We separated the dogs from the cats, which made up the large majority of the animals that we found and rescued. And over the next couple of days, we housed, you know, it started with a few hundred, then it rose up to 1,000. And in total, I think we had about 1,300 animals that we assisted since day one.
Now, this weekend was successful, but there are still some animals that need a permanent home. How can people get in touch with the Humane Society or find out if there are still pets that maybe they would be willing to take home?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have about 200 animals that are still left, and they're still not yet available for adoption. One of the primary reasons is, you know, some of them are too young to be spay or neutered, and all of the animals that we adopted out this weekend were spay, neutered, microchipped, vaccinated, and the adoption fee were waived. What the Joplin Humane Society is doing is they're actually extending the fee-waived adoptions up until July 9th. So if people are interested in adopting an animal, they can certainly go to the Joplin Humane Society, and there's no adoption fee, and that's until July 9th.
You can contact the Joplin Humane Society for more information at 417-623-3642 or visit joplinhumane.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Carroll County resident Diane Ferguson works as an animal adoption consultant and a dog profiler. She specializes in finding homes for unwanted animals in places where demand to adopt is high. And while most adoption pet portraits are hasty snapshots, her professionally produced images often help close the deal. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to meet her.
Twenty dogs, including two huge white Pyrenees and a half dozen plump black lab pups, bark from their large forested pen. Most are foster dogs being groomed for adoption. The rest, including several elders and Trixie, the husky therapy dog, belong to Diane Ferguson. Inside the rescue, two brindle Boston Terrier pug mixes skitter across the floor while several cats romp in a carpeted play area.
They just were adopted. They get to go to a home together in New York. They will leave this week.
A prosperous couple saw the Boston's photo on Diane Ferguson's website and fell in love. Diane Ferguson operates Unconditional Love Pet Rescue, taking in abandoned animals as well as some from overcrowded animal shelters, like Dylan, a brown shepherd.
He came from the shelter, and I don't know what happened to him, but he was just petrified, almost to the point where he wouldn't move. So I put him back there with my crew, and Trixie teaches him how to trust again, and he learns how to play and be with other dogs and be with people.
New arrivals receive a vet checkup, are treated for parasites and fleas, vaccinated, spayed, or neutered. The animals then socialized and assessed by a behaviorist, then placed for adoption. Diane Ferguson, a New York native, became a pet rescue consultant after moving to the Ozarks from Florida several years ago and volunteering at a shelter in Boone County.
I just had no clue, absolutely no clue, the volume of animals you just don't see the way you see it here. I mean, I was just blown away when I went to the shelter.
And like her cohorts, she feels constant pressure. Shelters, especially in the rural South, are swamped with puppies and kittens, abandoned elder pets, and abused animals. Hoarders and puppy mills add to that burden. Because of the intensive work done by animal adoption advocates and spay-neuter programs, data show the number of abandoned animals is declining, despite the fact that the number of cats and dogs in U.S. households has more than doubled in the past four decades. Still, in Benton and Washington counties last year, 4,700 shelter dogs and cats had to be euthanized.
In New York, and more so in Florida, was where I was really direct in working with rescue. I mean, they don't have overcrowded kennels, and you've got a dog to each kennel, and you've got a full staff. And the difference for me when I came here was, I guess there isn't the funds that other areas have. When being in the office and you see the number of people coming in to drop off animals and you realize there's no place for them to go, your kennel's full, what are you going to do?
To help save more animals, Ferguson started posting photos online with guidance from another rescue colleague.
And I decided to go on my own because I get too personally involved with the animals, and for me to work outside of it, it gives me a buffer. And keeps me able to work on the level that I am. So I had to step back.
If you search shelters and online sources to adopt dogs and cats like petfinder.com, you'll see thousands of snapshots of dogs and cats by breeds and location. But Ferguson's portraits, she's a photo restorationist by trade, are intended to convey stories.
When I take the pictures, I try to take them so that people can visualize them in their own home. I don't want them to see the sad stuff that they see online in their kennels. It's too hard. It hurts people's hearts, and they move on. I try to get them out and playing with them and showing their personalities. I mean, if they are timid or fearful, I will show that because the people need to know that. But that's all my time.
She posts her images on adoptapet.com for Good Shepherd Humane Society in Eureka Springs of dogs she takes in at her rescue and various independent rescue operations. She's rehomed 1,500 animals so far.
They're going to New York, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Maryland, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Canada, anybody who wants a dog and I can figure out a way to get it to them, Florida, I will get it to them, Texas, Oklahoma, they go wherever.
Potential adopters fill out an application, provide references, and if approved, the adoptee is scheduled for shipment, most often Dixie Dog Express. The fee is around $350, which covers food, medical, and transport costs. If the adoption doesn't work out, Ferguson will take the animal back. Her operation is break-even right now, but she also has support staff who provide supplies, labor, and fostering, including her mom in New York.
The adopters themselves will send money periodically. There's dogs, people that will adopt dogs and send money on the date that they adopt them every year. So there is a lot of help that comes in, and that keeps me floating.
One volunteer is Dr. Jan Quint, a local chiropractor. She's also been on the board and volunteers at the Good Shepherd Humane Society, where Ferguson is conducting an adoption pilot project, having found homes for 140 dogs.
Well, we really need good foster homes and for the dogs that we're trying to adopt out, and so that's one real thing we're looking for right now. And I had the privilege of fostering a little dog named Moffles this last winter, who had a difficult time getting out, and he had some health problems we were dealing with too, and got him cleared up, finally got him to his home. And I got an email today from the adopter. They live across the street from the ocean. He loves to swim in the ocean. When he's not swimming in the ocean, he goes to doggy daycare. He gets massages. And this is what is so wonderful about these homes, is that the opportunities are greater. The disposable income these people have to help these dogs is incredible.
Quint says Diane Ferguson's animal portraits are what draw so many prospective adopters.
And we had one named Blackjack, who I thought would never get out of the shelter, was in there over 6 months. And the woman from Virginia told me that what she was looking at all kinds of websites, and she said what captured her was his picture.
Diane Ferguson works 7 days a week, sometimes around the clock.
When was the last time you had a break?
There's no break. You do this, and, I mean, the break is going out and playing with them and grooming them and letting them love on you. That's my break. The rescues are not the answer. I mean, we're basically bailing out the Titanic. I mean, this is just, the problem is astronomical. The problem, the solution is going to be people that will fight for legislation and try to get better spay-neuter laws and animal cruelty laws and get licensing.
Public animal welfare education is also key, she says. But most of all, it takes lots of unconditional love. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information, call 253-1829 or search Unconditional Love Pet Rescue.
Earth, sky.
Should humans go to the planet Mars? As of 2011, only our machines have visited the Crimson Planet, orbiters, robot rovers, and landers. Earth Sky spoke with aerospace engineer and author Robert Zubrin. He's founder and president of the Mars Society and a leading proponent for the human exploration of Mars. We asked Zubrin, why go to Mars?
Mars is the planet that is closest to us that could have supported life in the past and may still do so in the present. And so by going to Mars and exploring those dried-up lakes and river valleys and drilling into the subsurface groundwater on Mars, looking for fossils, looking for microbial life that may yet persist, we'll be able to determine if life is a general phenomenon in the universe or is a phenomenon unique to the Earth.
The challenge, Zubrin said, of sending people to Mars might spark a new generation of scientists and engineers in a way similar to the Apollo moon missions in the 1960s.
The Earth is not the only world. And if we go to Mars, we're beginning humanity's career as a multi-planet spacefaring species. And if we do this, then 500 years from now, there will be new branches of human civilization on Mars, and I believe on many worlds beyond.
Do you think humans should go to Mars? Tell us at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Winds Community Band is all about truth in advertising. The ensemble is based in Arkansas, is wholly formed by non-professional musicians from the Northwest Arkansas community, and performs band music that takes advantage of brass and woodwinds. The Arkansas Winds Community Band. This summer, the band will be playing a wide variety of traditional band favorites, think Sousa, as well as pop, standards, and selections from the likes of Benny Goodman. The Arkansas Winds next perform tomorrow night at the Botanical Gardens of the Ozarks for the annual Red, White, and Blooms event. Then Monday night, the 4th of July, the band will play at the City of Bentonville's Holiday Gathering, and later in July will be on stage at Walton Arts Center as part of a junior high band camp. Recently, Alan Fields, the president of the board of directors for the band and a member of the band, came to KUAF to talk about the community-based group.
We have several occupations involved with the group. You know, I'm a computer programmer at the university. We have several teachers from the area and a music store manager, that, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
I mean, it takes that title of community very seriously.
Right, it does, yes. We don't have any professional musicians. There are a couple of people who make their main living in music, and they perform with us, and we're glad to have them. But most of us are just normal people who either was in band in high school or college and or college and then continue to play after that.
The first concert I want to talk to you about is Wednesday, when it's the Red, White, and Blooms
right.
at Botanical Garden of the Ozarks.
Right.
What's on the program for that evening?
The patriotic portion is going to be American Overture for Band, Semper Fidelis, Armed Forces Salute, and, of course, the favorite Stars and Stripes Forever. And then the other parts are, there's a Benny Goodman melody, and then a poppin' rock legend Chicago melody.
So you've got Stars and Stripes, the tribute to Chicago, Benny Goodman, a lot of brass. You're going to get some good brass.
Yeah, our group is about 70 people playing, and we're about split down the middle, brass and woodwind. There are some brass features and some woodwind features.
70 people. Have day jobs. When do you get together to rehearse?
Well, we rehearse Monday evenings at Farmington High School from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. We're actually, this is our last series of concerts for our season. We usually go from October through July, and so we have actually just turned out that we're going to have three concerts within 3 weeks, which is just because of the way schedules fall.
The Wednesday night concert at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks is outside.
Yes.
Does that make a difference?
Yes, it does. It's on the great lawn there, which is a really beautiful place. We actually have to be mic'd for an outside concert, and so that's a little different than what we're used to. It is also different in that a lot of times you just feel like playing louder because you can't hear the other people as well in the group. So it takes some adjustment.
How does a program come together? Because if you've got 70 people, usually have 70 opinions.
Yeah, well, that's true. We do have that.
For better and worse.
Yeah, but our main person, the person who picks our program is Michael Ferguson. He's actually a music director at Sage Music, and he's also been our director for about 12 or 13 years now. You know, pretty much what it is we find it's a combination of finding a location to perform and then as well as a function to perform at. For example, the Botanical Gardens came to us and asked if we'd be interested in performing during their concert series. And, of course, we jumped at the chance. And then Michael, like, takes a look at what the venue is or what the function might be for, and then he puts together a program according to that. You know, he does take some input, you know, like we'll read something at a rehearsal, and then he'll say, well, did everybody like that? And usually, you know, as long as we get to play, we usually like it.
So that is Wednesday night.
Right.
It begins at 7.
Right.
It's at the Botanical Gardens. And you talk about a turnaround. Monday,
right.
July 4th, you're at Orchard Park in Bentonville.
Yes. A couple of years ago, we were invited to play during their 4th of July fireworks. Last year was our first year, and it was there was a lot of people attending, and the fireworks were great. Once again, that's an outdoor concert, so once again, we have to be mic'd. And but they do a great job over there of setting up a performance area. They actually bring in staging and set up a stage.
And then the end of the season is in the middle of July, like July 10th,
right,
I believe.
July 10th.
At Walton Arts Center. And that's part of a junior high band camp?
That's correct, yeah. And that's always a great venue. The Walton Arts Center is a great place to play, and it's indoors, which isn't like our outdoor concerts. And we get to play for a very enthusiastic group of about 900 to 1,000 band camp students. And so one of the things we always like to emphasize at that concert is that 20 years from now, you'll be up here with us. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important message because obviously out of those 900 to 1,000 young people, mm-hmm. most will not be professional musicians.
That's true.
But to see adults up there who do have other vocations and
right.
to see that they still love performing music
right.
and there's still an audience to perform for. I think that's probably an important
yeah.
thing for them to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's what we do mention to all of them, you know, like you said, many of you will not become professionals, but there is always this outlet. And one of the things is for community concert bands, there's several groups around the country and we all are on a listserv. So one of the things we all do is send out emails about what our upcoming performances are and what we're playing. And so it actually lets you get a feel for how it is around the country. And one of the things that happened this past rehearsal is one of our former members lives in Fayetteville, Georgia now, mm-hmm. and just happened to be in the area. And so she sat in with us, which is always a good thing. You know, one of the things that this national list is if anyone is actually a community band person and they're out traveling, you know, you can actually check this list. And if you just need your community band fix for that week, you can always stop in at some community band around the country. One other thing about the music camp concert, even though it is for the music camp, is specifically for the music camp participants, the public is invited to that. What we do is we kind of have the public sit in the balcony. And then the orchestra level is for the campers. So you don't necessarily have to find yourself in the middle of 900 enthusiastic. Right. Junior high band members.
So Red, White, and Blooms, which is 7 o'clock Wednesday night at the Botanical Garden. Then Monday, the 4th of July.
Right.
You're about 8:30. You'll take, but I think it's Chase Missy that's ahead of you.
Is it? Oh, Chase Missy? Yeah, we've played after them before. Yeah, yeah, they're a great group. Yeah.
And then Sunday, July 10th?
Right, at 7 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville.
Is there a charge for the Walton Arts Center?
No, there's not a charge for any of the three.
Great.
All right.
And finally, if someone hears this and says, you know what? I have the trumpet, I have the trombone, and I'd love to be part of the community band. I didn't know it existed. How would they go about?
Well, we have a website, Arkansas Winds. Plural, ArkansasWinds.org, and we have an email, info@ArkansasWinds.org, and you can actually just do a Google search for Arkansas Winds, so, and that would get you to us.
And if people come and they say, now I want to put an instrument with the voice, I've heard Alan Fields,
oh.
where should they look for you?
Well, I play French horn with the group, and so I'll be in the French horn section.
Where did you play French horn when you were in a school?
Well, I went to Van Buren. I graduated from Van Buren, and then I went here at the university. So I was at the university for a few years and graduated from there. And so then was off several years and then actually found the Winds myself.
Alan Fields is the president of the board of directors for the Arkansas Winds Community Band. They'll perform next tomorrow night at the Botanical Gardens of the Ozarks for the annual Red, White, and Blooms concert. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Officials continue to investigate the cause of yesterday's chlorine leak at a Tyson plant in Springdale. An afternoon briefing is scheduled today to discuss the investigation of and the response to the leak that sent scores to seek medical attention. FEMA will open a disaster assistance center in Berryville this week. The center will be open at the Berryville Fire Station on Main Street tomorrow and Thursday. People in Carroll County affected by tornadoes and flooding between April 14th and June 3rd can seek help from specialists with the Federal Emergency Management Agency or the U.S. Small Business Administration. Hours both days for the center are 10 until 2. FEMA says the federal government has paid more than $28 million into Arkansas since a May 2nd disaster declaration. The majority of the money, more than $16 million, has gone to housing assistance.
The state's insurance commissioner says he'll try again to get the legislature's permission to implement a new health insurance exchange mandated by the federal health care overhaul. Jay Bradford says he'll seek approval for the exchange during next year's fiscal legislative session. Bradford says a state-controlled exchange is preferable to the alternative.
We have a choice. Either we are set up to be able to take care of the needs of Arkansas consumers, and if we're unable to do that, the federal government will operate our exchange. And that concerns me because it's so far removed from what we do now.
Bradford was unsuccessful in this year's legislative session in convincing lawmakers to go ahead with the state exchange. Many of them wanted to wait and see if the federal law will be overturned. New numbers out yesterday show another drop in home sales. Amy Glover Bryant is spokeswoman for the Arkansas Realtors Association.
The number of homes that sold in May as compared to a year earlier was down 20%, almost 21%. So we are still competing with the first-time home buyer's tax credit. I would also attribute the decline to gas prices being up. We had quite a bit of severe weather in April, which slowed down lookers, impacted May sales.
Home prices are also down about 8% for the same period, which realtors hope will prompt more people to buy homes.
Fort Smith is closing in on a record when it comes to June heat. The 4029 weather blog gets credit for pointing this out. The city is likely to set a new standard for June heating. The previous record for most days in the month to top 90 degrees in the city is 27, a mark set in 1953. Yesterday, Fort Smith climbed above 90 degrees again. That was the 27th time this June. And the city will set the new record if high temperatures break the 90-degree mark today, tomorrow, and Thursday. The National Weather Service is forecasting highs of at least 95 in Fort Smith through Thursday, and then possibly 100 degrees for highs as we move into early July. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has chosen not to put the Ozark chinkapin on the endangered species list. The Ozark chinkapin is a type of chestnut tree that grows in the Ozarks. There is fear that the tree might be at risk because of the spread of chestnut blight, a fungus that wiped out the American chestnut in 1940. Tom McKenzie with the Fish and Wildlife Service says that the blight doesn't kill the Ozark species outright.
It kind of changes the way it acts as the tree responds to the blight. It ends up creating more of a shrub instead of the traditional tree. But it does, in essence, survive, and it has a reproductive capability to maintain itself.
Tom McKenzie says that the tree is a fire-dependent species, meaning it requires that its ecosystem be regularly burned to allow the tree to reproduce.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals will take today and tomorrow off for the annual Texas League All-Star Game. Yesterday afternoon, the Nats dropped a 3-0 decision to the Arkansas Travelers in North Little Rock. The Naturals return to Springdale Thursday night to begin a 6-game homestand. And sophomore-to-be University of Arkansas golfer Emily Tubbert is 4 strokes back of the leader after the first day of the U.S. Women's Amateur Public Links Championship in Oregon. She earned the SEC Freshman of the Year award this past season while playing at the UA.
It is Tuesday, June 28th, 2011. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Beckin-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
You know, there was a time when we thought about doing a daily segment like this, and there really wasn't enough going on.
Mm-hmm. We did it for a little bit, but it just didn't quite connect.
And there wasn't enough going on, and now we have full segments every... I got to get some more help. Tonight, Ozark Poets and Writers Collective with author Jen Blackburn, 7 o'clock at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. Some live music, Jeff Fox at JJ's Grill and Chill in Fayetteville. Clint Scrivener at JJ's in Rogers. The Uncrowned Kings at Jose's Southwest Grill in Springdale. It's open mic night at Kennedy Coffee Roasting Company in Bentonville. And Born in November is playing at Neumeier's Rib Room in Fort Smith. None of these are the Backstreet Boys. It's a joke you weren't here for.
But the Backstreet Boys are on tour, as Antoinette has told us.
Yes, that's what I saw on Ticketmaster.
Anyway, now that you've had a completely non sequitur conversation.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by.
Sure.
Becca Beckin-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival presents the music of Mozart, Stravinsky, and Brahms, performed by the U of A Music Department faculty and guest artists this Thursday, June 30th at 7:30 p.m. in the Stella Boyle Smith Fine Arts Concert Hall. Admission is free and information is available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu.
That's the final concert in the series.
Last one.
The Buffalo National River Partners will host Mark Barron. He'll talk about the status and habitat of the Gene Rush Wildlife Management. Tonight, beginning at 5:30 in the Boone County Library, that's just off the square in downtown Harrison. The event is free. It's open to the public. For more information on regular programs hosted by the Buffalo National River Partners, you can call 870-704-9114.
Last week, Kyle and I met Joe Murfin, Vice President of Marketing for DAISY. While we were touring the company's factory, he told us a little about the annual DAISY National BB Gun Championship match. The 46th edition of this event is scheduled for this weekend at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. Between the opening ceremonies on Friday and the awards ceremony on Sunday, competition is scheduled between 48 teams from all over the country. Each group is comprised of young athletes who have already placed in a state match.
So these are kind of the best of the best is what we like to call them. There are thousands of kids out there in programs all across the country, like a 4-H program, something like that. You know, obviously, only a percent of them go to a state match and win, and those that do that then can come to our national match. So it's really exciting to see these young people and them and their families and their coaches. They take this very seriously. And we've had some national records shot at these. We had a national record broken last year in one of the shooting positions. At 5 meters, they shoot that 499 Daisy Avanti Champion, it's the name of the gun. And they shoot it at 5 meters in four different positions. They shoot sitting, kneeling, standing, and prone. Standing is definitely the hardest position to shoot in because you have very little stability and nothing to brace yourself. When you're in prone, you've got the ground that you can lay on and position yourself. And when you're sitting and you're kneeling, you learn how to get in position and brace your elbows against your knees. But really, when you're standing, you're pretty much up there on your own, teetering. You can brace your elbow against your ribs. And these are things that are taught.
Murfin explains that quite a bit of planning goes into preparing teams for competition.
So these programs they'll start building their team really very far in advance, and they may have up to, say, 90 young people apply to be in their program. And this is going on all over the country in small cities and small towns, big cities. And then they'll build their team from that. The first thing they do is they go through a complete curriculum where they teach young people gun safety. What are the parts of a gun? What are some safe ways to carry a gun? You know, never point a gun at anything you don't want to shoot. All the 10 shooting safety rules. Then they get in what I call marksmanship skills. How to breathe, how to squeeze the trigger, how to build a proper sight picture. But they'll teach a lot more than that. They teach these kids, you know, responsibility and ethics and self-control and how to be patient when you're shooting and don't just fire the shot, wait till you get the shot right. And so there's a lot of things these kids learn out of these programs. It's really an outstanding group of young people. I may be a bit biased, but I think I can stick myself out on a limb here and say these kids are pretty special. I mean, they're good kids.
In addition to watching young athletes showcase their shooting skills, spectators will also be able to see the talents of a special guest.
We're going to have a young man named Sean Dulahari, and Sean, out of college, joined the Army. He was on a Daisy team when he was about 10 years old, I believe. He started with a 5-meter team. He got into 10-meter pellet rifle. He went on to shoot shotgun. He shot on the Army's marksmanship team. Then he went out to Colorado Springs and trained with the USA shooting team at the Olympic facility there. He competed in the Olympics. He won some medals. He did a lot of world-class competition, traveled the world, and now he's a college instructor teaching kids how to shoot. So we're bringing him in to talk to these young people and demonstrate for them, you know, set him out there as an example of, you know, this could be you. This guy who's very successful in this field today, you know, at one time was like you. He was an 8-10-year-old kid on a BB gun team going to the national competition. And today, you know, he's become very successful in what he does and achieved his own goals. And that's really going to be the theme for our match, is that there's another step after you leave this match, because shooting really builds character that lasts a lifetime. And it doesn't matter whether you want to be a good parent, whether you want to be a good employee, whether you want to be a better boss, whether you want to be a better spouse. You know, these are things that you can learn, character traits you can learn by being in a Daisy Airgun program.
More information, including a detailed schedule of this weekend's events, is available at daisy.com/DaisyNationals.
And it's worth mentioning that this weekend's events at John Q. Hammond Center are free and open to the public. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. July, just a couple of days away, and to help us get ready for July is Wayne Bell. He writes the column Culture Club at FayettevilleFlyer.com. We're smack dab in the middle of summer now, once July gets here.
Yeah, it's hot. There's no way to escape it. But, you know, July, normally this period of the year is not a hotbed of activity. And even as far as big, huge releases for July, there's not a ton to look forward to this year like there has been in the past. But there are some things to look forward to as summer kicks into full swing.
I know, and you'll probably bring this up later. I think later in the month, the final Harry Potter movie comes out. So I know there are a lot of people excited about that.
That is true. And they have assured us that it's the final Harry Potter movie. I guess they could come up with something, you know, different. But it's going to be interesting. I think that comes out on the 15th. I think it'll be interesting to see where those Harry Potter kids end up in two or three years. Yeah, how they can move on from this, because this has been a huge chunk of time. This isn't just like a young actor, you know, having a one or two, you know, big successes, aka Macaulay Culkin or Elijah Wood. This is somebody, these three kids that have had, you know, 10 years of this.
And 8 movies, right?
Yeah, and 8 huge movies. So
they could retire to the beaches of Rio if they wanted, I suppose.
They could have retired 5 movies ago. But, you know, Daniel Radcliffe just finished or is finishing a run on Broadway and How to Succeed. And
he was in Equus before that.
Yeah, and Emma Watson's on the cover of Vogue this month. So it'll be interesting to see how they can move forward as young billionaires.
Well, Godspeed. What else can we look forward to?
Well, today for the music industry is a big day because Beyonce's 4 comes out. Surprisingly, it's her 4th album. So she's really up the ante on the creative names. But then on the 1st of July, Larry Crown, the Julia Roberts and Tom Hanks movie, comes out. And that could be interesting. I have a feeling that it's going to be kind of a... not bad, not great, just kind of good, pleasant, fun.
Which, what more do I want from Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts, right?
Yeah, you know, at some point you could watch them read a children's book and it would be entertaining. Yeah. So that comes out on the 1st. And then starting the next week, it starts to pick up a little bit. On the 6th, the Bravo returns with the 5th or 6th season of Flipping Out. Which, if you haven't seen that follows Jeff Lewis. He's a house flipper.
Oh, that show gets on. I cannot.
Yeah, because he's OCD and
he yells at everybody.
He yells a lot. But the interesting thing to chart with that show, because it's been on now, I think, for 5 or 6 years, is he went from house flipping to now it's couch flipping because of the economy. I mean, so it's been interesting to see how it's affected that business.
Interesting.
On the 8th, Horrible Bosses with Jason Bateman comes out, which is kind of an interesting premise about offing your horrible boss. And then on the 10th, HBO returns with its 48th season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I take it you're not a fan?
I thought that year they did the Seinfeld thing, whether that was last year or the year before, was interesting. But it would be if you put the Seinfeld 4. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. I'm kind of surprised it's still on. And then on the 12th, REM releases a 25th anniversary edition of Life's Rich Pageant. So it's hard to believe that's been 25 years.
It really is.
Yeah, that comes out in a box set.
So I imagine it'll be expanded, outtakes, additional songs,
yeah, additional
like
material
that.
And additional pricing.
right.
And then we've got some TV things to look forward to. On the 13th, Damages returns to DirecTV. John Goodman's joining the cast this year with Glenn Close. On the 17th, Breaking Bad comes back to AMC, which is 3-time and reigning Emmy winner Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul.
He's won it the last 3 years.
Yeah, and Aaron Paul won it last year for Best Supporting Actor. So although they won't be eligible this fall, they'll probably win again next year. And Web Therapy comes out on the 19th, which is a new show on Showtime with Lisa Kudrow. You know, and she's had a pretty good run since Friends, even though the comeback was canceled after a season.
She was so good in that.
She was so good in it, and it's got a lot of attention. On the 24th, Entourage comes back for its 89th season
and
on
final,
HBO.
Right?
89th and final. And not soon enough. And then the month ends on the 29th with Crazy Sexy Love with Steve Carell and Julianne Moore and Ryan Gosling. The premise looks really funny. You know, Julianne Moore and Steve Carell are a married couple having problems. And so Steve Carell starts to go for marriage advice from a male gigolo, kind of a ladies' man, which is Ryan Gosling, which is a fun part for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that looks, I think it has Emma Stone too. So I think that looks like that could close the month out on a high note.
And then we're into August and the dog days.
And when we get into August, you know, we'll have some more to look forward to. But the thing I look forward to most every August is September. And so then in September, October, November, we start to really get to the better stuff.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club, found at FayettevilleFlyer.com. Wayne, thank you.
Thank you.
Previously on Car Talk.
Ever since then, people have just been making fun of me.
Ryan, yeah. You have a sympathetic ear.
So basically, I got talked into this, what they called an engine shampoo.
What are you, some kind of a joke?
Wait, whatever that sympathetic ear that I was just promised.
Join us for more keen yet sensitive analysis this week on Car Talk.
Car Talk, Saturday mornings at 9 and Saturday afternoons at 3 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Time to ask a question now and offer you a chance to win 2 Malco movie passes and 4 tickets to a Northwest Arkansas Naturals game at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Antoinette, earlier on the program, we discussed the hot June, perhaps the hottest ever in Fort Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And the National Weather Service says there is a chance that highs may reach 100 degrees in Fort Smith by Friday. Today's question deals with summer heat. And it's simple. What's the hottest temperature ever recorded in Fort Smith, according to the National Weather Service? Anybody within 3 degrees on either side. So if the hottest temperature ever were 100, and it's warmer than that, and you guess between 97 and 103, you'd be included in the ceramic count. Yeah. Let's see. So all the near and correct answers will go into the ceramic cow. One winner will be drawn for the Malco Movie Theater passes and the Northwest Arkansas Natural tickets.
Yes. So if you have a guess or you know the answer, give us a call at 800-522-5823.
All guesses within 3 degrees on either side will be considered. And we'll tell you the answer after Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 28th of June, 2011. It's the birthday of King Henry VIII of England, born Greenwich, 1491. His older brother Arthur was supposed to become king, but Arthur died when Henry was just 11. He was crowned just before his 18th birthday. A well-educated, athletic, tall young man, charismatic, an excellent jouster and hunter, a graceful dancer, musician. He gave up participating in jousting and tournaments when he was knocked unconscious for 2 hours in 1536 in a mishap in which he also received a leg wound which never fully healed, and that was when he began to gain weight. The famous portrait of the portly king was painted about 3 years later. By the end of his life, he was obese, probably suffered from gout and diabetes, could no longer get around under his own power. He died at the age of 55. It's the birthday of the man who wrote Man is Born Free and Everywhere He Is in Chains, the philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau, born in Geneva in 1712, whose great thesis was that modern progress had corrupted mankind rather than improving it, that civilization had led to most of what was wrong with people. Living in a society led to envy and covetousness, and property ownership led to social inequality. It's the birthday of the founder of the Methodist movement, John Wesley, born 1703, Epworth in Lincolnshire, England. He studied at Oxford and, along with his brother, formed a Bible study group that others gave the nickname the Methodists for their methodical study habits. It was meant as an insult, but John Wesley hung on to it anyway. He believed that the gospel was carried out when Christians promoted the welfare of the less fortunate. John Wesley's rule, which goes, do all the good you can by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as you ever can. It's the birthday of the comedian Gilda Radner in 1946, Detroit, who on Saturday Night Live gave us the characters Roseanne, Rosanna Dana, Emily Latella, and Baba Wawa. And it's the anniversary of the Stonewall Riots in New York City on this day in 1969, the beginning of the gay rights movement. The Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village was a gay bar. Police raided the bar one night, and the patrons did not disperse. They rioted, and the riots led to gay rights movements and eventually to the first gay pride parades in the 1970s. Here's a poem for today by Paul Zimmer, Bach and My Father. 6 days a week, my father sold shoes to support our family through depression and war, nursed his wife through years of Parkinson's, loved nominal cigars, Manhattans, long jokes, never kissed me, but always shook my hand. Once he came to visit me when a Brandenburg was on the stereo. He listened with care, brisk melodies, symmetry, civility, and passion. When it finished, he asked to hear it again, moving his right hand in time. He would have risen to dance if he'd known how. Beautiful, he said, when it was done. My father, who had never heard of Brandenburg, 80 years old, bent and scuffed all over, just in time, he said, that's beautiful. Bach and My Father, poem by Paul Zimmer, from Crossing to Sunlight Revisited, published by the University of Georgia Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And time to answer our question of the day. The question again was?
What was the hottest temperature ever recorded in Fort Smith according to the National Weather Service?
And the answer is?
113 degrees on August 10th in 1936.
I'm not sure I know what 113 degrees feels like. I don't think I've ever...
You don't think so? Have you ever been to Vegas in the summer?
I have. So yes, I probably do know. You're a good point.
Well, it's just really hot there. I mean, it's different. It's more of a dry heat than the humidity here and whatnot.
That's true. A few other 100-degree bits of information. The earliest it's ever reached 100 degrees in Fort Smith, mm-hmm. June 6th. The latest, September 29th, which seems
that
especially...
That seems kind of late.
That seems especially cruel, actually. And if you were in Fort Smith in July 1954, you remember a doozy of a heat spell. Mm-hmm. 7 consecutive days of high temperatures between 105 and 111.
See, I don't think I remember anything like that. Consistently.
No. By the way, the hottest temperature ever in Fayetteville, mm-hmm. 110 back in 1954. All right, we'll pick a winner here in just a moment.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Bloomer.
And where is that Bloomer, Arkansas?
Yes.
Where is Bloomer?
It is southeast of Lavaca.
Okay. So, yeah, all right, mm-hmm. in the Arkansas River Valley.
Yep.
I have just enough time to tell you that there's going to be a sort of Southwest Conference reunion next college baseball season. Arkansas is one of the 6 teams in the 2012 Houston College Classic. The field was announced just a couple of hours ago. Also in there, Houston, Rice, Texas, and Texas Tech, all teams that used to be in the Southwest Conference. Tennessee will also be in the Houston College Classic, which will take place at Minute Maid Park in Houston. Couldn't let a day go by without another baseball note.
No. When is that?
Next season.
Next season. Okay.
They don't give a date yet.
Okay.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Thanks for listening.